Our first guest has paid close attention for years to Michigan's politics and economy, with a particular focus on the automobile sector. Daniel Howe's column appears several times weekly in the Detroit News. Recently, he's written about how ride-sharing and self-driving cars could dramatically impact Michigan's car sector, also about Tesla's desire to sell cars directly to buyers in our state, skipping dealers, and about Donald Trump's take on Michigan. Daniel Howe joins me now. Great to have you back, Daniel. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Last week, you covered the World Mobility Leadership Forum in Romulus, and what you heard led you to speculate on the impact that ride-sharing and self-driving cars could have on the auto industry and on public investment in things like roads and parking structures. Walk us through, please. What are you thinking here?
Well, I don't think there's any question but what self-driving vehicles and ride-sharing, more broadly speaking, are coming, and they're coming very quickly. You've already got technology that is enabling people driving their own cars to pick folks up from point A and take them to point B. It's very popular in major cities. My daughter lives in Washington. She uses Uber quite a lot to get from point A to point B. She doesn't have a car, and that's by choice, nor do most of her friends, as I understand it. But the technology is an enabler. I think we'll be bringing autonomous vehicles to the marketplace, and in a sense, kind of revolutionizing the auto industry. Uber predicts that by 2025, so less than 10 years from now, privately owned cars could be a thing of the past in major metropolitan cities. Now, we'll see that. They have obviously an economic interest in that happening, but the technology is clearly moving ahead, and the auto companies, led principally by General Motors, Ford, and Toyota, are really going down this road. I mean, they're investing heavily in it. They realize it's important. Their executives spend probably 25 to 30% of their time, which is a lot for a CEO of a major company. They're spending that time on this portfolio of issues: self-driving cars, ride-sharing, alliances with companies so they're able to do this, because I think a lot of these companies have come to the conclusion none of us are big enough, smart enough, and strong enough to do this all by ourselves. So they're partnering. In the case of the automakers, they're partnering with technology companies or ride-sharing companies. They're investing in them. General Motors has invested over $500 million in Lyft. It's a very interesting space to watch, and I think it's going to really change the auto industry as we traditionally have understood it around here.
Daniel, you've criticized the Detroit 3 over the years for some number of reasons for not embracing the future, for GM's hidebound culture and so on. Do you think generally the Detroit 3 have the savvy to adapt to these changes and change their business models in a productive way?
I think the short answer to your question is yes, although I would unpack it a little bit more. I was struck last week at the conference at the Detroit Airport, Weston, by the fact that the automotive sponsors were General Motors and Ford. FCA, Fiat Chrysler, was nowhere to be found. And I think as we move down this road, what we're going to see, and we're already seeing it, is the battle, if you will, between the haves and the have-nots. And the haves are companies like General Motors, like Ford, like Toyota, that have a lot of capacity, they have a lot of cash, and competence. And then the have-nots would be a company like FCA that does not have the cash, probably doesn't have to the same degree the technical competence, and as a result is really not playing in this space. And eventually, they're going to be, if they're not already, they're going to be so far behind the game that they're not even going to be in the game. So I think that's one thing. Secondly, to your point about culture, I have said many times in recent years that I'm struck by the way in which it seems to me GM and Ford particularly are managed differently, particularly General Motors. They just have it. You know, I've covered General Motors all over the world going back to about 1996. And I think the leadership today is far more realistic about the situation that they face, the challenges that they face. They recognize, and Bill Ford talked about this last week, they recognize that they still have to continue to manage their base business, building cars and trucks for today's market, as well as they can, because that piece of the business still generates the vast majority of revenue and profits for the companies. And without revenue and profits, you know, they're not going to be able to invest and do the things they need to do in the self-driving and autonomous spaces. You know, they're in right now a very good market. It's very expansive. We are on about the sixth or seventh year now of continuing expansion in the market. So it's easier to look good in a situation like this. I think as things start to tighten and slow, and I think they're starting to show that a little bit, we're going to see really how much different they really are.
You've referred to the proposition, and you alluded to it here a minute ago, that the auto industry could change more in the next 5 years than it has in the last 50, which
right.
is mind-boggling to try to get your mind around here. And you referred to that proposition in a column about Michigan's auto hypocrisy that you say is exposed by Tesla's lawsuit against the state of Michigan to try to sell cars directly to consumers here. Explain what you mean, please, by auto hypocrisy.
Well, starting with Governor Rick Snyder on down, whether it's the Detroit Regional Chamber's Mich Auto or it's business leaders from Michigan getting behind the American Center for Mobility at Ypsilanti at the Willow Run Airport, or the auto companies doing what we're just talking about, getting more and more deeply invested into the autonomous and self-driving spaces. Michigan is trying to position itself as the home of the 21st century auto industry, saying we have the capacity, we have the competence, we have the smarts, we have the engineers, we have the facilities. We should be able to center this next evolution of the auto industry here in Michigan to buttress the state's historic claim to the auto industry. We're very 21st century, is the message. And yet, the upstart from Silicon Valley, whose company has only sold, I think, 140,000 vehicles since its inception in 2003 or 2004, he wants to sell direct, his cars direct, in the marketplace. And the same people and the same forces that are saying we're 21st century are hiding behind mid-20th century franchise laws and saying, oh, no, you can't do that. Can't do that. You know, we want to be 21st century, but you can't do that. And then they gin up the argument, and I understand the argument. I'm not sure I buy it. That, well, if you let Tesla sell directly, then General Motors and Ford are going to sell directly. Well, I got news for you. I don't see that. And one of the reasons I don't see that is the same thing we haven't talked about this yet. Despite the fact that GM and Ford are making an awful lot of money in North America, more than any time in my lifetime probably, or since I was about 3 or 4 years old, Wall Street doesn't buy it. And Wall Street is looking at them and saying, you know, we don't think you're different. We don't think you've changed. We don't really believe that this management style is different. We don't think you can survive necessarily well another downturn. So the stock prices are not going anywhere. And I think if you want to see something that would take a major hit on their stock is for General Motors or Ford to come out and say, oh, yeah, we're going to start selling. We're going to set up our own networks of dealerships around the country, and we're going to sell directly to customers, and we're going to cut out the middleman. I mean, dealers have been partners for decades with these companies, and I think that's a battle and an expense they would not want to take on.
You have pointed out, though, that other states have reworked their auto dealer laws, and that dealers in some number of those states are not in any kind of free fall. Should the legislature, should the governor be considering rewriting those laws?
They could try, but I would submit to you that the likelihood that they would be successful is slim to none. Dealer lobbies in state legislatures around the country are very powerful lobbies. They're wealthy. And they're very smart. I don't think that that's also a battle that the legislature or certainly this governor are willing or would be willing to take on. So I don't see that as something that's going to happen. But I think, to your point, the fact that, you know, for example, if I want to buy a Tesla, I have to go down to Ohio or I have to go to Illinois to buy that vehicle. And then if I want to get it serviced, particularly because of the kind of vehicle it is, I have to make arrangements for my car to be taken down to Toledo or taken over to somewhere in Chicago. I mean, that's not exactly an easy thing to do or a convenient thing to do. So, you know, I'm not quite sure how this thing is going to play out. I think the ticking time bomb in the lawsuit by Tesla is a constitutional challenge that if it were held up, it could invalidate franchise laws around the United States. And if that happens, I mean, I think Tesla's very much swinging for the fences here, which is part of Elon Musk, the founder's style. And, you know, I'm not in a position to be able to say whether it be successful or won't be successful.
This was a suit filed in federal court, not in a state court, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So we're talking with the Detroit News' Daniel Howes. You've also written recently about Donald Trump and how he has portrayed Michigan on the stump, referring to that as dystopian, and undeservedly so. Where exactly is Trump wide of the mark?
Well, I mean, start with Michigan's a disaster. Well, Michigan has led the nation in manufacturing job creation since in this recovery, which is a fairly tepid recovery. Its unemployment rate is below the national average. He comes on the stump frequently and trashes Ford for shipping jobs to Mexico, which is an inartful and frankly inaccurate assessment of the situation. And he does it repeatedly. I've written about this on numerous occasions. My colleagues on the news side have done the same thing. And he's just inaccurate. Now, I will say this: I think it is abundantly clear that Michigan is becoming much more electorally important in this cycle than I think people thought it was going to be initially. The Clinton campaign has pretty much pulled out of the state of Ohio. The senator running under the Democratic ticket, Ted Strickland, the former governor, is way behind the incumbent Rob Portman. As a result, Michigan looms ever more important in the math for to get to 270 electoral votes. And so they're focusing a lot of time. President Bill Clinton will be in town today to talk about his wife's campaign. I think you're going to continue to see Trump coming through here and continuing to focus on this. And this is a way to gin up support for his candidacy among white working class specifically, and even among a lot of UAW members who may not like the fact that he's trashing the Ford Motor Company publicly. But his message may resonate with them, and that is that I'm going to rework trade deals. The trade deal screwed the auto industry and screwed the union auto worker, and I'm going to fix that. I don't think it happens to be that simple. But in terms of the actual math of what happened, we broke the story a year ago, the Detroit News did, during the national contract talks, that Ford was going to be taking its small car production out of the plant in Wayne, Michigan, and presumably to Mexico. I mean, they weren't going to take it to Germany, and they weren't going to take it to Asia. They were going to take it to Mexico within the North American market. And then we also reported that they would be replacing those vehicles with the Ranger pickup, the small pickup that is being revived, which is being built elsewhere in the country, in the world, but is being brought back to the U.S. market, and probably another SUV. Therefore, that the people working in that plant would not lose their jobs, they would continue to have products. So you're not shipping jobs to Mexico. Now, are you creating jobs in a new plant down there? Yep. Yes, you are. But there are reasons for, and it gets very complex, but why they made that decision.
But a Trump supporter would say, yes, but you're also not adding jobs in the United States by more.
Well, that may be true, but I think the point I would make is, okay, are they supposed to build those cars and lose money on them? I mean, that's the reality. FCA is doing the same thing. They're ending car production in the United States. General Motors is maintaining small car production at Lake Orion facility here in Michigan. And I made a crack to a GM executive about that and said, oh, and so that's the loss leader. I mean, and they know they're not making money, or at least not making a lot of money on that. And that's a real issue. I mean, you know, these companies, let's remember, they are in business to make money by building cars and trucks. They're not in business to provide jobs. That's not their job.
Daniel Howes is associate business editor of the Detroit News. His column appears several times weekly in that publication. Daniel Howes, great to have you back. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure.